Back to RSN Central. Yes, it's Tuesday hacks time. Courtney Walsh and Julian DeStoop. Good morning to you, boys.
You really emphasise that word hacks, don't you?
My favourite.
I heard Felgate's cheap shot on the way in.
It was cheap, wasn't
it? Wasn't it? I reminded him that out of the back.
Nice to feel loved, on the way in on a pretty brisk Melbourne Tuesday morning.
Looking forward to catching up with our next guest, especially what's happened to Steve Smith over the last couple of days over there in the UK. Respected sports doctor, Dr. Peter Larkins. We all know him really well. Good morning to you, Doc. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Nice to talk with you.
First of all, Stephen Smith, what would he be going through right now over in the UK?
Oh, he'd be going through a lot of anxiety himself because we know how driven he is as a competitor, and I think probably he feels pretty well with himself. So from his personal point of view, he'd be pushing like heck to say, look, let me train, let me see how I go. And that's often the case with elite performers who have had a head injury. The symptoms may be quite low in terms of headache or fatigue that you get after you've had a blow to the head. But there is a medical protocol that goes a bit deeper than just asking how you're feeling, Steve. And that's really what he's got to be going through. And normally that's a pretty established protocol that takes several days to go through, because you go from just resting period to a light training to a heavier training to a match simulation to actual competition. And that's been the protocol, which is why it takes days to go through in the usual sense.
Doc, were you surprised? I know there's, delayed concussion, but were you surprised he went back out to bat so quickly?
Yes and no. Is that Julian, is it?
It is.
Yeah, hi, Jules. Look, yes and no. I mean, you've got to rely on, Richard Saw, their doctor, is a very experienced sports physician. He's had AFL experience with head injuries as well as being in the cricket world for a period of time. So behind closed doors, he would have been assessed as not being concussed, because by definition, once he's got the diagnosis of concussion, he wouldn't have been allowed to return on the day. So, I mean, the blow was a blow to the neck, Julian, as we all saw. It wasn't a blow to the head as such, but you can still get brain injury clearly from that. So, and I think when he went back out, he just didn't look right, and I think he would have probably pushed pretty hard. And if he passed the true concussion assessment, getting him back out there at such a critical stage in the match was understandable.
Doc, it's Courtney Walsh from The Australian here.
Hi, Courtney.
Are you surprised by the criticism levelled at Richard and the doctors involved? Does that frustrate you as an expert?
It frustrates me. I'm not surprised, because people from outside don't appreciate the processes, and it's easy to criticise when you've not got all the information in front of you, Courtney. And, as I said, we're not talking about a junior doctor here or a rookie. We've got someone who's well-briefed in all of the international guidelines on concussion and has been an Australian cricket doctor for a period of time. Incredible, precious decisions that doctors have to make. And the fact that he went out there and didn't look right, I think he may have, just natural human nature from someone that they get a bit spooked by what happened. But I don't believe he went out there with concussion symptoms, because I don't believe Richard Saw would have put Steve Smith at that risk. I mean, the player welfare is paramount for the doctor's assessment.
Doc, are you surprised? I mean, given what happened with Phil Hughes and where Steve Smith got hit was a very similar position. They looked into the safety, they looked into the helmets, and there's that available, I guess, neck protection, yet Steve chooses not to wear it. I mean, should there be pressure on him to wear that, even if he's not comfortable with it?
I believe so. I think the problem is the design has not yet been, is not right, and a lot of the players find the neck protection restrictive in terms of their ability to turn their head left and right. And I understand that argument. All I'm saying is, okay, the design people have to do a better job. I mean, Philip Hughes was a 5 years ago story, and we saw that the helmet design changed to protect the neck and the very sensitive tissues that relate to that. And the similarity, I did put a photo up, I don't know if you saw it, the actual contact point for Steve Smith and Philip Hughes were almost identical, within millimetres of each other. And so this protection, some players like to wear it, others don't, depending on the size of their neck. They say they feel it getting in the way. Well, unfortunately, I think we've got to be aware that this particular injury, the natural instinct of these players is to tilt their head away from the rising ball. They don't duck into it. So as soon as you lift your head, the current helmets don't protect you. They protect your scalp, but they're not protecting these tissues. And so I think it's important that the design people and the biomechanics people, and I know the ICC is looking into it, but I think I can see the day when we'll have to have them as a mandatory thing.
Dr. Gareth Hall here. So do you expect him to play in that third test, or do you think they'll rest him and he should be right to go for that fourth test?
Look, unfortunately for Australia, I suspect he won't play because, as I said, given that the concussion diagnosis is definite, and I have clarified that with the authorities, then therefore the process that he needs to go through, if they go through a proper medical protocol, there isn't enough time for him to be available to play on Thursday in terms of the stages he has to go through without. So unless they sort of somehow can, and I don't think they will, you know, cut corners, then I'm not expecting him to play in this game, which is a really critical thing for Australia that this incident happened, of course.
And on the Breakfast Club this morning, Doc, they were talking about a few of the football injuries and they were struggling to understand what syndesmosis is. Can you please explain that to everyone here on RSN?
Yeah, I get accused of introducing all these made-up words into the footy field over the years, as Julian will attest to, and I don't make them up for it. I've got a list of favourite words, you know, in the medical dictionary, and syndesmosis is one that I will take some credit for introducing. So it's a particular form of ankle sprain that involves the ankle going in the opposite direction to the typical ankle sprain. So most people who played sport have sprained their ankle, and they know you roll it towards the outside, and it's the lateral or outside ligaments that get damaged, and that's the standard ankle sprain. With a syndesmosis, it's actually a disruption of an internal ankle ligament that's really in the front of your ankle, but deep inside. So if you imagine right in the front of your ankle, but then go deeper in, it actually holds the tibia and fibula together. So you really have to sprain that by rolling the ankle in the opposite direction. The so-called medial ligament gets injured. And we've seen some horrific ones over time, you know, with really nasty injuries. But the difference is it takes longer to get better and you can't just run it through and strap it up. I guess you're talking about Zarakis at the moment, and you know, but you know, they go back. But there's the Joel Selwood, there's the Dane Swan, there's
Nick Nat at the moment.
Nick Nat, who had a nasty one, you know, on his way back and in a really bad timing. But so the issue for that particular syndesmosis, it's the name of it used to be called high ankle sprain, guys. If you remember the term high ankle sprain, and people just thought it meant higher up the leg, but it actually meant higher grade and internal sprain in the front and central ligaments. And it is one that's become better recognised with all the skill of the doctors and the scans and things, but also the surgery to fix it is so much simpler now that you'll often hear players having a quick operation to put a thing called a tightrope through there to try and make the ankle more stable.
So it's worse than the stinger, Doc, is that what you're saying?
Well, no, listen, you know, don't bring up the stinger. No, that was one of my favourite words. I threw in the word burner once instead of stinger, because burner is the NFL term that they use when a person, when the nerve gets, you know, when the shoulder slips out and they get this sort of numb arm and you see them waving the arm around. And I think it was Gary Lyon's favourite term when I worked at the Triple M people, Julian. He's, you know, the stinger and the burner. But it's definitely worse than a stinger, but it's not my favourite word in the footy world still.
Okay, and Doc, just the last one before we let you leave. This is from Tony. I think he's a Collingwood supporter.
Yep.
What's happening with Degoe?
Look, I'm certainly not totally up with that. I mean, I understand that he's had, what do they call it, an awareness? That's a great medical term, isn't it? An awareness. What does that mean? It means that the pain returns either in a hamstring injury or a calf injury related to the nerve area tissue. So an awareness in a hamstring happening means that there's probably been a setback in terms of the injury. And that's what happened to Trent Cotchin in the game the other day when he tried to come back and he had an awareness in his hamstring again. We saw him sit out. So, unfortunately, it really means that you're normally back to 2 or 3 weeks backing off again with the go before he plays. So that effectively takes him into the finals period.
I know you're a busy man, Doc. Thanks for joining us here on RSN Central today.
Talk to you again, guys. Cheers.
There's